and welcome to a new edition of the Phantom Wrestling Show on the Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network. I'm Patrick. I'm joined by Mike Prime and Danny Danger. Fellas, how are you guys doing today?
Evening, boys.
Good. It's good.
Now,
going all right?
Yeah. Now, last week we recorded the show earlier than we usually do, and we missed the Seth Rollins injury during the house show over in the United Kingdom. So,
the biggest wrestling news story in recent memory.
Just about. And, you know, for everyone that has already probably heard about this, read it, saw it, you know, Seth Rollins injured his knee in a match in the main event against Kane. And as you know, everyone that may have gotten a chance to watch that video on YouTube, make sure you check it out. It was definitely a nasty injury. Seth Rollins will now be out for 6 to 9 months, which means that the title is taken away from him, and no WrestleMania for him. And with that, they lose their biggest heel and their most consistent main guy on the roster at this point, you know, with everybody else out, you know, John Cena's out, Brock Lesnar's out, Randy Orton's out. Of course, Daniel Bryan's been out. I guess The Undertaker's like your most top guy, consistent guy now in the full period. But guys, how bad is it for WWE to lose Seth Rollins?
It's not good, man. I mean, 6 to 9 months is that's light years in the wrestling business.
Yeah, especially because he's still – I don't know if – he may not even be 30 years old yet. So, I mean, he's pretty much in the prime. He's at the top of the game. He's been at the top of the game. Well, I was reading a statistic that this past Monday was the first Monday Night Raw that has not featured Seth Rollins since the Shield's debut in 2012. Like, that's – I mean, he's been on every episode since then. He's a consistent performer. He was in the Shield as a solo, as the champion. You know, he's there. The show centers around him and what he's doing. He's the big heel, you know, like they don't really, and as you were saying, the top of the card is very thin right now. A lot of their the guys who have more name value, not just to wrestling fans, but also into a little bit of crossover appeal, your John Cena, Rock, and Randy Orton to an extent, aren't there. They're not there either. So to have the guy who's going to, if he's not the big name that everybody knows, they know that if they see him, he's going to put on a good performance. And he's out. I mean, he ruptured his MCL and ACL, had to have surgery. I think he's having surgery this week. That's a big blow to them. It gives them a chance if they're willing to take it, to shuffle things up, because the way ratings are, they need to do something. I don't know if this is something they're going to take a lot of chances on with him gone now, but this could be something that they can use to test different avenues and test different stars and see what works for them.
You know, I think just the fact that one guy gets injured and suddenly everybody's talking about how, like, there's nobody to take his place, the top of the card is so sparse, this, that, and the other, and, like, that wasn't a conversation we were having previously. Like, you know, there's not a lot of main event guys. I think that's a testament to the kind of workhorse that Seth Rollins has been. I mean, he every time you turn on WWE television, it's like he's out there having a stellar match. And I think that an injury like this is kind of just comes with the territory of him on the kind of grind, on the kind of schedule that he's been on for the last several years, the kind of workhorse that he's been. I think we should probably be thankful it's not worse than it was.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that with this, you know, it could have been a whole lot worse. But, you know, we know that he will be back. You know, like Danny said, I mean, he's still young and he's just hitting his prime. And I think, if anything, Seth Rollins shows that, you know, he can be somebody who can be put in the top spot and go with it. You know, because as much as, you know, we may talk about how losing hurts Bray Wyatt, it's been the opposite with Rollins, where he's lost more than he's won, but you know, the way that he's been booked has been so strong that you know nobody thinks about that, or at least not anybody that, you know, who makes a big deal about the wins and losses. So with that, with him being out, now they're having a tournament. All they said was it's going to be a tournament. A new champion will be crowned at Survivor Series. We didn't know how this was going to go on. So then came Monday night, and they came up with a bracket. And there's going to be matches on Raw and SmackDown for the next 2 weeks until, you know, either the semis or the finals, or, you know, we'll all be at Survivor Series. Now, give you the names here on the brackets. On one side, we have Roman Reigns versus Big Show, Cesaro versus Sheamus, Del Rio versus Stardust, Kalisto versus Ryback. On the other bracket, we have, you know, Titus O'Neil versus Kevin Owens, Neville versus Barrett, Dolph Ziggler versus The Miz, Dean Ambrose versus Tyler Breeze. Now, one thing that sticks out to me here is Kalisto. No, it's like of all the odd tag teams, you put Kalisto in there. I would have thought they better put somebody like a Big Show or a Mark Henry on this spot. Are you guys surprised Kalisto is in this tournament?
I am surprised that they put him in the tournament, but I'm happy because I've been a big fan of Kalisto and previously as Samurai Del Sol. And the guy is fantastic and he can do so much. And even if he gets eliminated first round, which, you know, is very possible with some of these guys, I still think it puts a little bit of spotlight on him as a solo performer. Because I mean, ultimately, the Lucha Dragons, I think, can only go so far. And when they do split, I see Kalisto as the one who could potentially have more success as a singles wrestler in the gimmick. And, I mean, he kind of is the gimmick of the Lucha Dragons, and they kind of put Sin Cara with him. So I think that I'm very happy that he's getting an opportunity to shine like this.
Yeah, I think that especially in the bracket that he's in, you know, whether or not he gets past Ryback, you know, if he were to do that and then wrestle either Del Rio or Stardust, I think that he can have a good match with either one. You know, I think, you know, especially looking at a Del Rio Kalisto match would interest me just, you know, because I think that Kalisto definitely stand out against somebody who can wrestle a similar way as he does. And, you know, yeah, I don't think he would get past the second round, in my opinion. But definitely a chance for him to stand out. Any other names that stand out to you guys that are in the tournament or are not?
Before we move on from Kalisto, I mean, this is just one of those things that you know is going to happen eventually. It's just a matter of when. You know, as soon as they teamed him up with Sin Cara, you knew eventually they're going to break him up. They're going to launch Kalisto. He's going to be a single star. So it's not the kind of thing that has to happen yesterday. It doesn't have to happen today, but it's going to happen eventually. So I think this, you know, when you're trying to fill up brackets with 16 guys, I think it's an excellent opportunity to feature Kalisto in, you know, in a segment, in a match with a little more focus on him as an individual star, as opposed to a part of the Lucha Dragons. So I think it's a great opportunity and I really hope I hope that he takes advantage of it.
So, any other names that stand out that are in the tournament or are not in it?
What do you guys think about Tyler Breeze going out in the first match?
Well, I thought it was kind of unusual that they put him in this. Isn't this his first televised match?
In the main roster, yeah.
On the main roster. I mean, he's had matches on house shows and stuff, but his like first match, he gets put in this field of 16. And so, I mean, that was... Like, I understand they want to put him in a match that means a little something, but to me that seemed a little bit of a shock, you know. Like, I thought that I did not think that he was going to be one of the people thrown into this bracket. I don't know who they would put in his place, but when I saw his name, I was like, "What? Tyler's on there?" I was kind of shocked at first, you know. But it's good. I mean, they're trying to make him a player on the roster, and in order, you know, you have to kind of put him in matches that means something, and I think this is a good start.
I think that it's very telling the way that he went out. You know, he didn't take a Dirty Deeds and then get a 1-2-3. You know, it was presented more as the wily main roster veteran got a roll up on him, you know?
Yeah, definitely. It doesn't bother me at all. You know, he's the new guy coming in. It's a tournament. And then he's going against Ambrose, who just about everybody has him going to the finals of this tournament. So I think if he came, for example, and lost to somebody like a Ryback, people would have more of a problem with. If that was the case, but the fact that he came in and then got Ambrose, and then, you know, nobody's gonna be mad that Ambrose won. So I think that does play into things. And you know, there's a place right now for Breeze. I mean, I think that, you know, I think that we know that he's not gonna be a top guy, in my personal opinion. So, you know. But as long as you book him right, you get him into the right programs, I think that you can do things with him, and he'll be a decent guy who will, you know, who'll be a good worker. But there's a limit to what this guy can do, and so it doesn't bother me at all. It's not like it would be more upsetting if somebody like Finn Balor or Sami Zayn had come in and, you know, been out in the first night of the tournament.
Well, I mean, what my thing isn't that he was eliminated first round. Like, when I saw him in the tournament, I pretty much expected that, especially with him being set up with Ambrose. My big thing was just that he was included in the tournament initially. It seems like there's a lot of other main roster guys who people, you know, like, are a little more established with the fans. You know, you put R-Truth out there, or you know, Damian Sandow, or somebody who at least kind of the fans know, if you're just going to essentially feed this person to Dean Ambrose on his way into the next round. So that's where I was kind of I did not expect to see Breeze's name in that bracket.
Yeah, well, at the same time, fair. Yeah, at the same time, you know, you don't do that, especially if you're having mostly tournament matches. You know, you don't want to wait too long before you put him out in the ring, you know, and have his first match. Although, you know, I would have had him wrestle a match a week or two ago and beat some jobber.
R-Truth or Damian Sandow.
Basically. So, you know, I know we kind of talked about this off the air, but how do you guys see this tournament going as far as your Final Four, per se?
I think the final is obviously Reigns and Ambrose. What it takes to get there, I'm not sure. I could obviously see Kevin Owens going into the Final Four. And maybe Del Rio. I think Del Rio's a guy they're going to try to keep strong. But this is obviously going to Reigns and Ambrose. Now, once they get to that match, I think anything can happen. Sheamus could do something. Somebody could turn. Any number of things could happen once they get there. But that's where we're going for Survivor Series.
Yeah. What I would like to see is something like what happened back in 1998 when The Rock was the baby face, and then he turned to win the title and join the corporation. I think that it would serve Roman Reigns a whole lot better for him to turn heel and take the title and be with the authority, you know, and, you know, kind of play, you know, the crowd, the fans, because, you know, you remember how The Rock was the people's champion and the people were way behind him, and then he just turned them and they hated him for it. I think that this would be the perfect time for him to do this and, you know, have a good heel run as the champion. I think people will accept him more as a champion if he was the heel with the authority than if he was a baby face at this point.
I think there's a strong face run for Reigns down the road, but it's on the other side of a heel run, I think.
Yes, I agree. I think he needs a good singles heel run before he can, you know, get that love from the fans. You know, it's kind of like when you think about Rollins, when he comes back, he's coming back as a face. You can't have him, because he's going to get that, you know, return pop, and he's gonna, mm-hmm. you know, he's gonna come, and I think that you can't help but to cheer for him when he gets back. you know, out of the way that Triple H did, I think, one of the many times he came back from an injury.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting theory, but I mean, like with Seth Rollins, yeah, I think that, I mean, he may come back at least, you know, like you said, as a face. I mean, if they want to put him back as a heel, they maybe kind of let him be kind of an in-betweener for a week or two and then have him go back to heel if they want to do him that way. The problem I see with Reigns at this point becoming a heel and becoming the heel in the company is he being that he's relatively inexperienced still in the ring. The heel is usually the guy who dictates the pace and generally is in charge of the offense for the majority of the match as the face tries to fight from underneath. And so I don't know if he's experienced and confident enough in himself to be in the leadership role in every single match that he's in. You know, as a face, you're getting some moves in right away. Then you're trying to fight from behind. Eventually you kind of get that burst of energy, hit some signature moves, counters, reversals, and then the match kind of goes towards its close. But as a heel, he's going to be the one, you know, applying the beating, applying the dreaded WWE rear chin lock in the middle of the match. And so I don't know if – I mean, people already kind of crap on him when he goes into long matches because his repertoire is not that diverse. So if he's the heel and he's having to do the majority of the offense, I don't know if he's ready for that. I don't know if people have enough confidence that he's ready for that.
Either way, he has to be ready for something because I think all roads lead to him being involved in the title picture for the near future and most likely towards WrestleMania now. Unless, you know, John Cena gets in the title picture when he gets back. But, you know, I think this is going to be, you know, a do or die time for Roman Reigns. And he's going to either sink or swim, you know, and we'll see what will happen. But I would rather see Reigns be the one that turns heel than Ambrose, personally. Although everybody else is, you know, calling for the opposite.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know if you really have to have – I mean, I know WWE pretty much likes the heel-face dynamic, even though they claim they don't have heels and faces. Why can't you just have two guys who are friends go out there, you know, sport a competition, trying to win the championship? Maybe it gets a little heated because Ambrose or Reigns tries to pull a little something on the other, but neither guy has to turn full-fledged heel and join with the authority. I mean, he can, you know, you can have either one of them. I mean, more than likely it's going to be Reigns who wins the championship. And then you have, you know, maybe then the authority tries to recruit different people to try to back and get to be able to dethrone Reigns and bring the title back to the corporation. The authority, whatever you want to call them. It's the same thing.
Well, I would think for the authority to continue to exist, they would need, you know, a wrestler on their side, and I don't think that Triple H is the one to do so.
Well, no, but you don't need somebody who, I mean, like, that's what I'm saying. They could do a thing where they try to recruit different wrestlers, you know? Oh, they try to talk to Wade Barrett and say, oh, well, Wade Barrett could be our champion. And then Reigns destroys him, and they say, well, screw you. You know, Wade, you told us you were decent, so now we're kicking you to the curb. And then they could bring in somebody else, and they could, you know, Sheamus, you got to come in, you got to cash in on him, you know, like we'll pay the Wyatt family to go jump him, and then you got to cash in afterwards and take the title for us. And that doesn't work. And then, like, you know, so it's the authority then coming from behind as Reigns continues to look strong as he lays out whatever competitor that the authority tries to throw at him, rather than him being on top and laying waste to baby faces.
Is Roman Reigns starting to grow on you guys?
No.
No. He's growing on the crowd.
Do you think?
Each time he goes out, there seems to be like the Cena, the general Cena fans, the women who think he's attractive, the kids who kind of get behind him because he's a tough guy. I think more and more he's starting to get a following. I don't know if it's main event level yet, but he's starting to get people behind him. And those are the people that, that spend the money that WWE wants behind him anyways.
Well, you know, there was that one good crowd, I think after Hell in a Cell, it kind of popped for him. But I mean, yeah. Like, Raw, you know, Raw this week was pre-taped. I mean, you know, those were edited noises. So you could tell in the opening segment the way you get like a second of a crowd kind of booing and then this like oddly loud cheer despite the crowd visibly sitting on their hands.
Yeah, so, well, it's like when they used to pipe in the Goldberg sounds.
Like I think that we're basically heading towards, you know, Roman Reigns battling through and beating all these other guys and remaining strong and winning the belt. And I guess he's not getting as terrible of a reaction as he used to. And I think part of it is that he's talking a lot less and Daniel Bryan is not around.
Yeah.
He's not seen as usurping Daniel Bryan right now.
Yeah.
But I mean, a year from now, is that still going to be the case?
I mean, that's what they hope. I think they would hope that a year from now he doesn't have to worry about growing his fan base one at a time because he's got a strong fan base. Whether it happens or not is a different story. But it's been pretty well apparent since he was kind of like the middle of the Shield from that he was going to be the one they wanted to push. Whenever the Shield cut promos, you know, as it went later and later on, if he wasn't talking the most, he was standing in the middle. And Ambrose and Rollins were on either side of him. So, I mean, it was obvious even then that they saw something that they wanted to center things on him. I mean, being cousins with The Rock definitely doesn't hurt either. So, they obviously want to push him. And it may be one of those things is if he doesn't take, they're going to keep pushing him and pushing him.
And I guess we'll see, but, you know, there's going to be a new champion at Survivor Series and, you know, some of us will be there live to see it, and it's definitely going to be fun. And something exciting to happen here in Atlanta for once, you know, because, you know, we don't get those big, big, important shows, at least it feels sometimes. So it's kind of cool that, you know, we're going to get the chance to see that live. With that, let's go a little bit over to the East, if you will, and... let's talk about the aftermath of Power Struggle from New Japan Pro Wrestling. There were a few, it was like three or four different tag team, you know, matches. But a few things that we singled out last time, it's the Evil, I guess is what Watanabe's been called now.
Yeah,
going against Goto and Goto getting the win by disqualification.
Naito interfered. Yeah,
yeah. So we expected something like that to happen. Now that you know, Evil was part of his group. So then we get surprising most Matt Sydal and Ricochet defeating the RPG Vice. For the Super Junior Tag Tournament. Danny, were you surprised at this one? What are your thoughts on that one?
I was very surprised by Sydal and Ricochet winning, not because they're not a good, deserving team, but because they're the least established of the four teams who were in the finals. You had Roppongi Vice, Red Dragon, Young Bucks, all very established in New Japan, all very established in other parts of the world as well, and Ricochet and Matt Sydal being kind of the makeshift team, so to speak. But they did very well. They worked very well together. And so I although I was surprised, I wasn't disappointed. I liked them winning. The big thing that left a bad taste in my mouth was the segment afterwards. With these tournaments they do in New Japan, the G1 and those kind of things, what the people are fighting for is a number one contendership to be cashed in at a major event, okay? And with this tag tournament is the theory is they then go to fight the champions at Wrestle Kingdom on January 4th. But the thing is, all the other teams came out, and so they've already announced that it's going to be a four-way. So it kind of made the whole tournament pointless when Roppongi Vice and the Young Bucks and Red Dragon are fighting, you know, the basically the four teams who were in the finals are now fighting each other in a four-way match at Wrestle Kingdom. Now, I'm not saying that I don't want to see the match. The match will be fantastic. It's just, it kind of dilutes the importance of going through and having this tournament and fighting all these different teams if ultimately you're not going to, as the winning team, you're not going to be getting your one-on-one shot. So that's kind of the thing that left the bad taste in my mouth. The match was great. The team who won of Sydal and Ricochet is great. It's just the kind of after and what it set up for Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah, basically. Now, another thing that was noticeable to me was AJ Styles was in action. Of course, he got hurt recently, and I believe he was supposed to wrestle JT Dunn a few weeks ago, but he had to get out of that one because he was hurt. So
he was supposed to wrestle JT. He was also supposed to wrestle at Ring of Honor. He didn't wrestle at either of those places.
Right. So it was good to see that, you know, that he was able to wrestle, you know, a short tag match, but he'll be fine. Ishii successfully defended the never open weight title against Honma, which I knew that it was no way Honma was going to get that title. Just not now.
Not at not this
ever.
Show.
You know.
Maybe, well, he might get a belt. He's probably going to get a big win at Wrestle Kingdom, whether it's for a title or not is debatable.
The big win for him is coming one day, but I think it could be the very last match that he wrestles. He'll get the big win because that way, hey, he'll keep the thing going, right?
Him
not being able to ever win the big one. And lastly, the main event, Nakamura defeats Carl Anderson in a very good match. I think definitely deserved to be the main event. And now that leads us to what we get to look forward to on January the 4th with some matches already happening. As you mentioned, the four-way tag match between Red Dragon, Sydal and Ricochet, the RPG Vice, and the Young Bucks. It's going to be fantastic. This whole show alone may give me a reason to stay up whatever time it is. I believe it's like on a Monday night for us.
Oh, yeah, it's like 2 or 3 in the morning. I think they usually come on Sunday. Well, no. Yeah, because it's on the way they do this, it's January 4th no matter what day of the week it is. But, yeah, it'll be at like 2 in the morning for here.
Then the Junior Heavyweight Championship will be defended. Kenny Omega will defend against Kushida. Then for the Intercontinental title, Shinsuke Nakamura versus AJ Styles.
That is the cream dream wrestling match that people have been begging for and talking about. They hoped it would be the finals of the G1 Climax, saying that, oh, you know, AJ and Nakamura have never wrestled each other before. They have. It was in 2008 in New Japan. Nobody remembers it because Nakamura wasn't the King of Strong Style at the time. But this is the big match when people, indie wrestling fans, IWC fans, talk about guys on the indies. They're like, oh man, I need to see these guys fight. AJ Styles versus Nakamura is pretty much right there at the top of everybody's list. So this is if people aren't interested and haven't bought New Japan World yet, I think this is the match that could get them to buy it at least for the 1 month.
Oh yeah, I mean this thing alone is worth. I mean, just to think about it, right? When tickets went on sale for the show, before any match was announced, I mean, there were hundreds of people in line, who knows how early, to buy. You know, had tents out there to buy tickets for Wrestle Kingdom. So,
it's essentially their WrestleMania. I mean, the same thing. WrestleMania tickets sell out before anybody knows who's going to fight and who's even going to be there. Because, you know, I mean, people thought probably 2 weeks ago, oh yeah, man, Seth Rollins is going to keep the belt until WrestleMania and he's going to have this big match. He's probably going to lose. Now Seth Rollins isn't going to be on the show, you know, but people don't care. They know it's the big event. They know it's Wrestle Kingdom. They know you're going to have the biggest matches, the biggest feuds. Entrances are going to be over the top. It's the big show. No matter who fights there or what the specific matches are, people want to be there.
Yeah, so definitely get. And for the main event, for the heavyweight title, Okada versus Tanahashi. And I think this will finally be the one where Okada will get that W and there'll be that passing of the torch. And then, it's just really, I mean, just these four matches make this show worth everything. You could just have these and be it, and you know everybody will have their money's worth.
Do you think the rumored Ring of Honor title match will happen at Wrestle Kingdom?
Well, see, I had heard that rumor, but the rumor prior to that was that AJ Styles was going to be the one who they seemed to be building towards him finally winning the Ring of Honor championship at Final Battle, beating Jay Lethal. And then since AJ's already an established star in New Japan, he could defend it there against somebody. But if he's fighting Nakamura, I don't really think they're going to do a title for title match, because neither place is going to want their champion to lose. Because, you know, I mean, it's not like in WWE where it's the U.S. versus the world champion. Both guys right. technically work for WWE. You right. know, like AJ comes from Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor wants – now Ring of Honor loves their New Japan relationship and all this, but they still don't want their champion going there and losing, even if it's in a non-title match, getting pinned definitively in the center of the ring. You know, it's just – and then Newton, and then if now they don't want to have Nakamura as their world champion when his schedule is going to be so limited. Mm-hmm. They're only going to have him in the U.S. for, you know, a handful of times a year. So I think if something happens and changes things around, I think it's possible. But if it either comes down to AJ Styles and Nakamura being a title versus title or a non-title champion versus champion match, I don't see that as happening. I almost see more so as Jay Lethal going over there and defending against somebody, just in a title defense, you know, defending against Honma or whoever, somebody
that audience knows.
Somebody the audience knows they can get behind.
Yeah, that I could see that. So, but yeah, it's going to be a great show. So definitely something to look forward to now. You mentioned, a champion losing a title to another promotion. Have you guys heard about Del Rio and the whole thing with the mega title and WWE not letting him?
He's been forbidden to drop that belt.
Right. So
really, yeah. I hadn't heard. I know I hadn't heard anything specifically. We had speculated about it last week.
That's the report. Official
that
now.
They didn't want. There's no way they're going to have him go lose, especially when he's a champion in WWE. They don't want him to lose. You know, the same week he was on TV, so then Triple A could go, oh man, well our guy just beat WWE superstar Alberto Del Rio. You know, like they don't want to give Triple A that rub.
Yeah, well, what happened was is, AAA executive, vice president Dorian Rodan was on, did an interview earlier this week, and he basically said, "Yep, WWE will not let him come back and lose the title, so they are now going to have their own tournament, and the title is now vacant. Now vacant has 3 titles,
Oh my goodness!
And they're going to be having the tournament." You know, and
Vacant is just holding those belts until Abeyance comes back and takes all of them.
Basically. So, now we're going to have another tournament in another country for a new champion.
Goodness gracious.
Not that we haven't had enough tournaments, you know. This will be the fourth tournament for a major title. I guess if you can consider Global Force Championship major title.
Nope. Well, that's what I'm saying. We were mentioning this, and it dawned on me. It was a Wednesday after they stripped Rollins of the championship. I was like, Jay Lethal's the only world champion, you know. And then you and I, Patrick, had kind of the debate about, well, do you still consider him the number one champion versus say Okada? And my argument was yes, at least in North America, he holds a higher profile. Ring of Honor does, partially due to, you know, WWE kind of feeding into it and people knowing of Ring of Honor because the WWE guys were there, versus the New Japan heavyweight title. So, I mean, those are pretty much your two guys. In any major promotion around the world, it's pretty much right now your champions, Okada and Jay Lethal. And that's it. I mean, you want to talk about the top of the card being scarce. The top of the wrestling world looks kind of scarce.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think it's that way across the board?
I don't know.
Like, at this point, when we're talking about, like, top-tier performers in the world, I mean, who are we talking about? Jay Lethal, AJ Styles, Nakamura?
Okada, Tanahashi.
Not a ton of guys.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of great talent, but I think it's ones that have that are at the top, that have been at the top a while, that are established, that are known, you know, outside their own promotion, those kind of things. It's just kind of it seems like things are just in an odd flux. I don't know. I don't know if it's like a changing of the guard kind of thing that we're not even yet aware of, or just stronger styles catching up with guys, and a lot of the bigger companies not building young stars to take the places of the older stars when they have to take time off. You know, like I don't know what it is even. It's something that we can't put our finger on at this point.
Yeah, I can definitely not figure that out, but it's you know, and that they'll go back to the one thing I really don't like talking about. I'm gonna go ahead and bring it up now, is the ratings. It's like maybe people just because people just don't care enough, and I think that also has an effect. But what do you guys think about the ratings? I mean, the ratings are getting to lows. Like every week is getting lower and lower.
I don't know if you guys saw last night, third hour of Raw dipped below 3 million.
That was the lowest.
Hour was 2.86 million.
And the overall rating for the show has dropped only 30,000 more than the lowest rating they've had since Raw went to 3 hours, which was Christmas of 2012. But that's only 30,000 more viewers than that. Yeah, and the third hour is, we've always talked, is supposed to be your big hour. The other 2 hours of the show are supposed to make you want to sit and watch the third hour. But, you know, but somehow, whatever, I mean, and you can sit here and pull a dozen different factors out. You know, it comes on late, the 3 hour format's a little long, Monday Night Football, you know, whatever, baseball, basketball, whatever you want to throw out there. But it all comes down to something's happening that's not engaging people enough to where they want to stay and watch the show. It'd be like going to a wrestling show, like if you went to Survivor Series and you just left about 10 o'clock.
Well, think about this, though. I mean, you know, people always say, oh, yeah, well, Monday Night Football is a factor. But, I mean, look, the Bears versus the Chargers was not a game that was going to excite that many people, you know?
That's what I'm saying. They could sit here and blame all kinds of things, and they will. People sit here and say, oh, well, it was Monday Night Football, or, oh, well, there was some other event going on, or, oh, well, you know, blah, 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 the weather. You know, I mean, they can blame the weather, the phases of the moon, who knows what. But, I mean, regardless of what those extra factors are, wrestling in general, not just WWE, needs to step up and hook people. You know, those first hour or so of the show doesn't need to be just throwaway garbage. It needs to be stuff that excites people, that keeps people going, man, that match was good, or this segment was good. What are they going to do an hour from now? What are they going to do for the main segment? You know, it's supposed to be building to this, ultimately, this big, big happening at the top of the show. And if they're not able to hook people, no matter what the other outside factors are, it's on the fault of the wrestling and the wrestling show.
Yeah, I mean, look, anytime I was in a position for several years where I was hosting a weekly event, and I was always, you know, worrying about drawing people and seeing empty chairs, and I understand what that's like. And when you first hit the point where you draw less than you used to, and you're no longer growing, you blame the weather, and you blame external factors, and you blame all these other things, and you tell yourself that to console yourself for as long as you can, until it finally, it's, you know, the weather's fine and nothing else is competing and this, that, and the other, and you're still not drawing. And you have to figure out, do I need to do something different, or has the time just passed for whatever it is that I'm doing? And in my situation, the time had passed. I was never gonna get back to drawing the kind of crowds that I did at one time, and that I had to deal with that. When it comes to wrestling, I think that it's just, you need to change up what you're doing, because what you're doing isn't working. Wrestling, I think, can hook people when it's good. And I don't think that – I don't think 3 hours matters. When we go to an AWE show, we get a three-hour show, and we don't get commercial – we don't get commercial breaks or anything like that. I mean, it's not that long. If we're engaged in the show and enjoying what we're seeing, it doesn't feel like 3 hours. And when it's over, you kind of want to see one more match.
Yeah. You know, when the show ends, I'm like, man, what are they going to do next time? You know, like – and that's how you should feel when a wrestling program ends. You shouldn't just say, "Oh man, you know, that was a pretty good show. I enjoyed it." You should be like, "That was a good show. How are they going to top it?"
Exactly. When I was looking at the ratings information from last night, I saw some comments that were like, "Well, have they ever considered, you know, starting the show an hour earlier, like starting at 7, or would that mess up the West Coast?" Or, and I'm like, the time of day is not the problem with there being the third hour being late at night is not the issue. Because I was one of those people that dropped off after the second hour. I didn't see the third hour last night. I didn't care. I'd already been lost. So there was nothing there that was keeping me engaged through the end of the show. And I'm a pretty forgiving wrestling fan. If there's anything even halfway decent about what I'm seeing, I'm probably going to keep watching it. So for me to drop off after the second hour like that, I think that's saying something.
Yeah, that's true. And that's what I'm saying. They can blame all these extra factors, but ultimately it comes down to the program itself and what are they doing and not doing in order to try to keep even longtime viewers engaged.
Yeah, you know, and Paul Heyman was talking a while back when the ratings first started going down. He did some interview somewhere where he talked about, you know, when you have something like that happen, you don't panic. And you don't abandon everything that you're doing. You recognize that some of your fans are leaving and you're not replacing those fans with new fans. So you have to figure out, you know, where do we pull new fans from? How do we pull in new markets? And over time you try and do that. You don't panic and throw everything out the window and react immediately in the moment. And I think they're not doing that. I don't think they're panicking. I don't think that the answer is like next week they need to start off the show and like – everything's different and all the belts are different and suddenly a ninja shows up and like everything's a Russo angle because it's new and different. And I don't think that's the case, but I kind of would like to see a little more adjustment by this point in time.
Yeah. And another thought that I had with that is the fact that this show was taped, the fact that the main event segment was the return of The Undertaker and Kane to face off against the Wyatts, and anybody who reads the spoiler knew that's what it was happening, and many people didn't stick to watch how that came about. And what does it say about, you know, not even the Undertaker can get people to stay and want to see this.
Then they can sit here and say, oh, well, it's because there was no element of surprise. People knew it was going to happen. People know what's going to happen all the time. Like, you know, the basics, you know, you go to watch a movie, you know, whatever the heck it is, it's Rocky. You know, he's going to fight and he's going to box and he's going to win or whatever. You know, like, you know how the story is going to end, but you still go and watch it because it's a good story and it keeps you engaged until the end. That's one of the things that's just, no matter what the ending is, whether people know about it or not, there's doing things prior to that ending of the story that they're losing people. People aren't staying, you know. I mean, like within a regular show, typically you're going to expect that your last hour is going to do stronger than your first couple because people are going to come in late and they're going to be out and they're going to, oh, okay, now I'm home. It's 9 o'clock. Well, I'm going to turn on wrestling now. It's been on an hour, but I'll catch the best stuff in hour two and three. But I mean, it's more people watch the beginning and then they don't stay. I mean, that's the big problem is you have people in your store. Okay. If those people leave without buying something, you're the one at fault. You know, you got them in the store. They shouldn't leave your store without buying at least a pack of gum. If they leave the store without buying anything, it's because you did something wrong in your store. And that's what it is. People come check out a new restaurant because it's new and it's different. Or they say, oh, well, I like this restaurant of a chain in another city I was in. if you don't stay for the main course, if you don't order dessert, if you don't come back the next time, it's because the restaurant did something wrong, not because, well, it was a little far to drive, or, well, it was a little bit pricey. If it's good, if it's really good, you're going to drive an extra 15 miles to go to that restaurant. You're going to pay an extra $20 for you and your family to eat if it's really good. If it's not, then you're not going to go back. You're going to find something else. So you're just not going to go out to eat. You're going to cook at home. You know, like, there's something that the business, that the WWE as a product is not doing to engage fans, to keep them there when they're there, and keep them coming back.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And, you know, that the whole thing that, you know, and I think I mentioned this before, is something that Vince McMahon has said, is like, well, people should just watch it because they like wrestling. It's like, no, I mean, like, for example, you brought up, you know, AWE. You know what? If AWE started putting out crappy wrestling, I'm not just going to show up because I like wrestling, because, hey, you know, I'm not going to pay to go see something that's crappy. At the same time, you know, if they're showing us crappy stuff, you know, nobody's going to tune in to see that kind of stuff. So it's kind of like, but I don't know, can they turn around?
They don't really have a choice. I mean, it's just going to keep going. I mean, they have to. It's a business. If they don't turn around, things continue to drop and continue to drop. There's going to be big changes, because they're going to potentially start losing money. You know, yeah, sponsors aren't going to want to pay them as much. Commercial advertisers aren't going to want to pay them as much. USA Network's not going to want to pay them as much because they're not bringing in the ratings consistently like they used to. You know, when it starts hitting them deep in that pocket, that's when major changes are going to come. But it shouldn't have to get to that point. They should be able to make minor adjustments that turn things around.
Yeah, I mean, you know, major adjustments, major changes may or may not be necessary. I don't know that any of us are really in a position to know or to chart the path forward better than anybody else. But if major changes are necessary, they have not taken enough they have not declined enough to get to the point where they're willing to make them yet. And that is the reality of the situation that we're in, is that however far down ratings need to go, or whatever other metrics it is that they're using. I mean, ratings are easy for us to talk about, but it's not the only metric that they're going to concern themselves with. However much of a hit those metrics need to take for them to make major changes, they're not there. And if they continue to decline, at some point invariably they will. You know, I studied small business for a long time, and startups especially, and I can't tell you how many businesses that are successful only found a successful model when they had like 1 or 2 months left before they were out of business. And the reason for that is that you're often not pushed to take the major drastic steps that you need to take until your back is up against the wall. And we can talk about ratings and where they are right now, you know, till the end of the day. Their back is by no means up against the wall yet. So how much worse will things need to get before they make major changes? Do they have to make major changes to turn things around? I don't know. But the ship is not irreversible. I mean, they can turn things around. They've done it time and time again. It's just a matter of finding the secret formula that will do it. And I don't know that it's any one answer. It's probably a number of smaller things.
Yeah, they're definitely going to have to hit their rock bottom. They're going to have to get through the lowest point in order to get back. I mean, they've done it many times before. But, you know, it sucks that it has to get really bad before it can get better. So with that, let's move on from Raw ratings now. Danny, you were at a Platinum Championship Wrestling show this past weekend.
Yes.
And I know that because you were all over the photos there.
I was all over the photos, really.
No. Because you were on the side by where everybody entered. So as they were coming out, right in the corner.
Whose pictures were you seeing?
Somebody posted them on Facebook. There. Yeah.
Oh, they had a photographer around, so it was probably her pictures. But yeah, I was right there on the edge.
Tell us, Danny.
It was the first time I've been to Platinum Championship Wrestling. This was in Porterdale, Georgia. It was about an hour's drive for me. The reason I went, the name that I wanted to see and the match I wanted to see was the women's four-way tag. Dimension De Rose, who's wrestled for AWE, I've followed to go see her wrestle Crazy Mary Dobson in Jasper, Georgia. And so she was going to be teaming with Sue Young, who's also moderate name on the women's independent scene. She wrestles in Shine a lot, in Carolinas, things like that. And so Dimension De Rose and Sue Young were going to be teaming together. And so I thought, okay, well, you know, there's not another wrestling show going on. I kind of made the decision to go that afternoon. The venue was a little unusual. It seemed like it was the back half of a sports bar. It's like, I mean, there's the rings kind of what appears to be what either had a bunch of tables at it at one time or like a dance floor. And there's a stage and they packed the chairs kind of around it, including like a row of chairs against the wall only a couple feet from the ring, which I thought was a little unusual. But I mean, it was much more of, you know, typical Southern wrestling. You know, the crowd was, I don't know if it was just the venue or the 60 or 70 people that were in there were just ridiculously loud, you know. But I mean, you had families, kids, old grannies yelling at the bad guys and stuff. There was an old woman who was yelling at two of the bad guys, a tag team known as the Washington Bullets. They were jarring with each other during the match so much that when they actually went to walk out, she threw her water bottle on him because he was talking so much trash to her. So she's throwing her water bottle, getting water on him, getting water on everybody else. He starts throwing his water bottle back at her. Like, this was the kind of Southern wrestling show that it was. It wasn't really my taste. I'm not into I've never been a big fan of the old-time Southern wrestling style, and that's pretty much what the main matches were. I mean, they had a few, you know, they had a couple names I've seen or I've heard of in the Georgia area, and even the ones that I was kind of like, oh, man, I know who they are, and I've seen them do okay. Even for some reason, even they just didn't seem as sharp and as crisp as I had expected or as I had seen them elsewhere. So I don't know if it was an unusual show. Midway through the show, they had their lights out match. Okay, Marco and Bill the Butcher, Marco, who was Fitness Marco in AWE, who we talked to on this show. He's a big face there. He's President Marco, and he was fighting Bill the Butcher, this wild man, violent hardcore guy with a beard. He wrestles in like pretty much like a loincloth or something. And so they were fighting in a lights out match. You know, they had said that, oh, the feud's so crazy and it's been so violent, it's a lights out match. You know, these guys can step in there. There's no ref, no sanction. These guys can, you know, we give these guys the ring. They can do whatever they want to each other, but we're not held liable. They actually dimmed the lights for that match. They had pretty much the majority of the lights turned out. They had a couple of spotlights kind of over them, and that was it. But that was midway through the show. That wasn't like usually when they do a lights out match, they do the, or a non-sanctioned match, they do the show. And then they say, okay, the official show's over. Here's now the lights out match. We turn the lights off. We turn them back on. We let the guys wrestle. That way they kind of make a distinction between the show and what's not the show. So I thought it was odd placement there in the middle. The match was okay. It ended up with Marco going through a table, and that's kind of, and then Bill the Butcher just kind of walked away. And so that was where it ended. But then they went to intermission. And they came back and had a couple more matches. And the women's tag was actually the main event of the show, technically the main event match. That was a good match. That was my favorite match, really the only match I enjoyed thoroughly on the show. And then afterwards, they did some big over-the-top bad guys coming in, taking over kind of angle. Steve Platinum, Jeff G. Bailey, some guy named The Carpenter, and one of the good guy girls, Miss Rachel, kind of all came and wore masks, and they unveiled as a mask, and they bloodied one of the commentators, and pretty much then other bad guys ran out and kind of joined the group, and it was this segment that went on for 20 minutes. It seemed like it went on for an hour, where they were talking about, you know, bringing it down and burning, you know, Wyatt family type stuff, burning the company down and rebuilding it in our image or whatever. I was bored by it. I left the show actually kind of mad.
Sounds a little boring.
I left the show kind of mad. Like, I was like, that was – I didn't enjoy that. Like, I was – you know, had they ended with the women's match and everybody kind of been cool, I'm like, okay, that's cool. But they did, like, 20 minutes of this stuff. And they – each of the – like, the Carpenter came in, and then the other three guys came in masks, and they each, like, slowly took off their mask, and it was like a big unveiling. Oh, it's so-and-so. Talks.
And I don't watch really a new faction trying to.
And
yeah,
I heard children were crying at this thing.
yes, there was like three or four little kids who were there with their dad, and I don't know why they started crying, but they started crying. Jeff G. Bailey commented as the bad guys were leaving the ring. He's like, "I made children cry. This is the greatest day of my life." You know, like it was funny. Like as I was leaving, the kids and the dad passed by me. Like three of the kids are crying, and three of the four of them. And I don't know if it's just like, you know, one little kid starts crying because he gets upset and the others start crying too or what. But like the dad's walking with him and he starts laughing. He's like, "Why are you guys crying? Like, what happened here? Why are you guys upset?" He thought it was funny. It was, I don't know, like, but it was a weird thing. Like when they first came out for the segment, one of the guys in the mask came out with like plastic wrap or something, like a plastic tarp. And he spent a very long time trying to unfold this and lay this over the mat. As the Carpenter's cutting this promo, and then the Carpenter kind of has to help him pull the thing out. And then they bloody the guy, like, on top of the plastic. A manager comes, like, a bad guy manager comes out, and he's like, "Oh, I want in on this," and blah, blah. They beat him up, and they pour molasses and feathers on him, but of course it's on the plastic. I was like, that's kind of weird that you throw plastic down. Like, well, you don't want to get – you want to burn down the promotion, but you don't want to get the mat dirty. You know, like, it was – it seemed like they were trying too much. Like some of the people who were like regulars, there were people who got up and left after a couple minutes, like into this big promo. Like they just got up and they were just, "I've had it. I'm done. I don't want to watch this crap." You know, like that's, and overall, like everybody was kind of like, "What? Where? How, why is this taking so long?" And unveilings, and you know, then you had pretty much by the end of it, there were 10 or 11 people who, like, pretty much every single bad guy in the company. One or two good guys ran down and got beat up, and it was just, I don't know. It just, it felt like they were trying too hard to get something across.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like, how much did you pay for this?
It was $10 for the ticket. It was, the show was about 2.5 hours. They say the show was supposed to go from 6 to 8. Show didn't start till about 6:15, 6:20. With this after angle, it was almost 8:45 before the show was done.
Wow. And
I got to meet Sue Young, got a picture taken with her. That was pretty much who I went to go see. Saw her in Dementia Wrestle. I got my $10 worth. But, you know, I would have preferred if I was just able to go and just watch that last, just watch the one match I wanted to and leave.
Gotcha.
It's just, I mean, and there's a lot of people who like it. Apparently they, you know, they run in the same city. They get the same 50, 60 people there every single time. People like it. But it was not my thing. But that's the great thing with wrestling. There's so many different varieties out there that there's stuff that you can always find something
for everybody.
Yourself. Yeah.
You know, I think about that when we have our pay-per-view nights over here that Danny, you've been to one, and Patrick, you're normally here, how I can look around the room and I see that it is, you know, our group will run the gamut of gender and age and race and socioeconomic status and you name it. And it kind of always reminds me that there's something in wrestling for everybody. Within wrestling, there's something for everybody to connect with.
That's it. I mean, and that's the biggest thing too, is especially on the independents, is where every single promotion's trying to establish their own identity. You know, you have promotions like Chikara, who play more to a family friendly, a little more lighthearted, with kind of, you know, cartoonish characters. And then you have places, you know, more like Beyond Wrestling, like Ring of Honor, like some of the others who are trying to take it into a more serious, you know, the strong style. You know, and then you can look into New Japan for that. And then you can look into, you know, you can go to PWG, where it's kind of a mix of both. Like, it's this ridiculous hard hitting, but it's over the top as far as some of the comedy and just kind of the way the matches are in the crowd, you know.
And then just kind of the epic, you know, fantasy storytelling of Lucha Libre.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And their matchmaking is every single match is 2 out of 3 falls. You can go to look at the European stuff. You know, the old world of sports stuff in England was, you know, this very flippy, twirly, catch as catch can. You know, that's kind of, that influenced a lot of guys.
And talking about wrestling that's going on here in the Atlanta area, Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment is actually going to be having a show this upcoming Sunday, House Party 5. And on the line, we have promoter Josh Wheeler. Josh, welcome to the show.
Hello, can you hear me okay?
Oh, yes, we can. Josh, House Party 5, I mean, you're putting up a great lineup. Tell the fans here what they're in for this Sunday.
I will go ahead, and I've said it a million times. It seems like every show just gets better and better, and I just wish the crowds would get larger and larger. But I really think on paper right now, this might be our most impressive card. I really believe that.
Yeah, I can tell you when I saw the card from the names that have been announced, I was like, you're definitely stacking it up. I think that this is maybe one of your better stacked cards. As far as the talent that you're bringing in from all over, it's not just any one place. And so let's start. So Jimmy Rave is going to be defending his Georgia Wrestling Crown title against David Starr. And that match has match of the year written all over it.
This match has been this has been coming up for a couple of months now, hasn't it? A ton of anticipation behind this.
I mean, when David pulled the upset over Cedric, I mean, we kind of thought he would cash in, didn't know it was going to be that soon, but he hits me up and he's like, hey, I want to go ahead and cash in November. I want to come back. And we're like, well, that's kind of quick. You know, we're thinking maybe show of the year, or maybe January, but no, he was like, I want to go now. Like, And he's got a good point. Like, he is at the hottest right now he has ever been in his career as a singles wrestler. He's got victories over Johnny Gargano. He's tearing up Beyond. He just had a great matchup with JT Dunn in Combat Zone. So it's like he is on fire right now as a performer, and he's ready to come back to Atlanta, and he wants to go straight after Jimmy Rave. I mean, you know, he said, hey, I saw Jimmy beat Davey Richards, and he beat Davey Vega. But can he beat Davey Wrestling? And that's the question that everybody's asking. Can he beat Davey Wrestling on Sunday? If there's anybody that's going to try to out-cheat Jimmy Rave, it's going to be David Starr. I mean, it's obvious the guy has, you know, no care for the rules, no care for the fans. It's all about David Starr.
Yeah, I mean, Dave is one of those kind of guys that doesn't really make that many friends that easily because
he's a prick.
But I think what makes it worse is that he backs up everything he says in the ring. You know,
that's what's infuriating about him.
It's not like he says I'm the greatest thing in earth and then he sucks. No, he is great, a great wrestler, and I think the fact that people can't question that, you know, they say your attitude sucks, but the fact that he backs it up and. Yeah, just seeing him and going against Jimmy. Jimmy's had one of the best runs I've seen any wrestler, you know, in the last year or so. And golly, it's just gonna be. I don't know how this is. I can just see how this is gonna end. It's just gonna be. You know, it's like probably not your best headliner this year so far. In my opinion.
I totally agree with you. I really think this is that match that like. Now you take, I mean, and Jimmy's, you know, no, take another way from Cedric or Davey Vega or JT Dunn even, or, you know, even Davey Richards at the Superstar Show. But this really, to me, like, I think this is Jimmy's toughest test just because it's such a clash of styles. Like, that's what I don't think people understand is, like, David Starr is an amateur for first. He was an amateur standout. You guys have him on your cast. I mean, he was a legit amateur standout. And I don't know if Jimmy's ever actually wrestled amateur style. He might have. I don't know that much about his high school years, but David is going to bring a completely different style, and at the same time, he's so arrogant, but he can back it up, like you said. I'm really looking forward to that matchup. I think that actually, I mean, that one and now, I mean, today, I mean, Leo Rush and Sugar Dunkerton just all of a sudden trading bars in the mixtape, you know, rap analogy to it. Like, uh-huh. I mean, these guys, like, when Sugar sent me the promo, I was like, damn, dude, you went in. Like, I told him, I was like, that's one of the best promos I've seen in months.
Sugar's amazing, though. He's always good.
You know, I think this match would have been hyped by itself, but like now both of these guys are coming in mad on Sunday.
Well, and that's what I mean. Like Sugar came out and had that fiery promo, and I'm like, okay, cool. And all of a sudden, like today, I'm driving to Athens, and the Twitter feed pops up, and I'm like, oh wait, Leo responded, and I hit play immediately, and I was like, holy shit, this just went somewhere I didn't even know about. And here's the truth. I mean, I'll pull the curtains back. 2 weeks ago, we didn't know who Leo Rush was going to face. And Sugar stepped up. Sugar requested this match. Sugar came to us and said, hey, guys, I'm off this weekend. Can I face somebody? Can I wrestle? And I said, would you like to wrestle Leo? And he goes, Leo Rush? Fuck yeah. And there you have it. And then all of a sudden, like, the promo started coming. And now it's like, I don't know. Like, I mean, I don't know what happened somewhere else or what, but to me, it seems like there's something going on that we don't know about. Now it's like, man, I'm so excited about that matchup.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I wasn't 7 days ago. I'm not gonna lie. I was like, when we first kind of like knew it was gonna happen, I was like, okay, this could be interesting. Leo's debut. How's he gonna, you know, do against the Atlanta faithful? And I knew the fans were gonna be behind Sugar, but now I'm like, man, people might actually cheer for Leo because when he said, I don't do this for fun. You think I like making $60 and driving 14 hours? Like, wow, that's, you know, he's going real right there.
Yeah, and I think that also, you know, and he, you know, I think Leo Rush, you know, with just, you know, he was just at the Combat Zone iPay-per-view, and then he was also over at the Evolve show. He's been getting a lot of hype lately, and I think that, you know, he's coming in also with, you know, with good steam coming to the show here, making his Atlanta debut.
So, yeah, I'm totally looking forward to that one. We announced it last night during Raw. I'm excited about this matchup. Adrian Armour and Iceberg.
Yeah.
Like,
that's something else, man. That's going to be something else.
After what Iceberg and Darkmon did, I'm like, holy cow, and you know, a lot of people don't know this, but Armor's got some bruised ribs. So I'm a little worried. Like when Armor asked the match, I'm like, hey man, you know, you're hurting, you're not feeling good. And he's like, come on, I want Berg. I want to take out the biggest guy in the hierarchy before the 29th. I want to prove that the heroes are ready for the 29th. And I was like, okay man, like I'll give it to you. And I'll be honest with you, I think Armor's a little hurt that JT didn't make him his partner. I really do. I think that he was a little shocked by that. And so he was like, okay, well, if I can't have Chip and Murder, I'll take Iceberg.
What do you think about fans bring the weapons for that match?
No. Nope.
Plus, think about this, all right? From what we saw between Iceberg and the Dark Mountain last time, I don't think they'll have any problem finding their own weapons. And
hopefully we can get the ring, because, you know, we did break some stuff at the quad there at the last show, so hopefully we can contain it.
Yeah, I don't think you guys want to break any more stuff. You guys want to continue to have that place in good standing.
Yeah, for the sake of my tab with that place, we need to control the chaos a little bit more than we have been.
Yeah, and so you kind of mentioned it, this big tag team, JT Dunn and his partner, which I believe you guys announced is Kimberly, going against two members of the hierarchy, Murder One and Chip Day.
As a matter of fact, I mean, that match is still tentative. There might be some scheduling conflicts. Something came up Monday, and there's a little back and forth on some little issues there, and we're just trying to make sure that match is going to happen. They will probably be here. It's a long story. I don't want to get into it, but it's still on paper. So nothing's changed yet, but as we always say in the wrestling business, card subject to change. So
definitely. Well, hope it works out.
Guys are wrestling in Philadelphia, New York, and in New Jersey in a weekend. It's hard to maneuver them to Atlanta like, you know, the plan originally was. That's all I can say.
Definitely. We definitely understand that. And Marty Bell is coming to Atlanta and facing someone in the Roar division.
Last I saw, it was my girl Dementia DeRose. Okay.
His name Dementia DeRose, and it was you know, Dementia asked the match about 2 weeks ago. We were, you know, going to try to make, you know, put Marty Bell in, you know, in a match that we felt was fair for her, you know, coming off TNA. It's a little bit different style. Not saying Marty Bell can't go. I don't want that to be, like, interpreted wrong. Because Marty Bell's a great women's wrestler. I mean, WSU, Shimmer and Shine. But the Roar division's a little different. So, you know, we're like, okay, maybe Kiera, maybe Priscilla, maybe somebody different. But Dimitri is like, I want this match. If she's coming to my town, I want this match. And we're like, okay, Dementia, we're going to give it to you.
You don't argue with Dementia DeRose.
No, I don't argue. Yeah, and I'll go and tell you, like, I mean, there's hair's going to fly. I'm extremely worried about Marty Bell. You know, she's a looker, and I have a feeling that after Sunday, she may have some bruises and some black eyes.
Damn
it. I mean, you saw what she did with her ass to Ashton Starr, so imagine what she's going to do to a girl who's being billed as, you know, this pretty little doll and, you know, a superstar. And Dementia doesn't play that.
Dementia's going to take that as a challenge. Dementia's going to take that as something that she's going to want. Like, she gets joy out of, like she bashed Ashton Starr pretty bad. And she, like, had fun doing it. If she thinks that she can, like, rearrange a pretty girl's face, I think she's probably going to enjoy that a little bit more.
She just decapitated Ashton.
Death by butt, as Patrick referred to it as.
But, I mean, let's not forget what Ashton did to her. I mean, he dogged her out. He talked trash about her. He beat her with a chair. Then when she had a situation and couldn't make it to the Masquerade, he talked more trash about her. You know, I hate to say it, Ashton had it coming.
Yeah.
He did egg it on a little bit. He already had a beating coming, and then he egged it on a little bit further.
I will say this. Where did he get his mouth from? Like, he talks a lot.
I really don't know.
This came out of nowhere. Like, he almost never talked when he was wrestling men. All of a sudden, he's wrestling girls, and all of a sudden, it's like, listen here, bitch, I'm going to kick your ass. I'm like, where did this come from, Ashton? Like, where did this fire come from? But, hey, he's making the Roar division something to talk about, and he'll hopefully be there Sunday. I've not really talked to him, but, you know, he's always welcome to be the show. We don't have anything for him, but who knows?
Yeah, well, yeah. Last I heard, he was still in the hospital recovering from his match with Rose. I don't know. I think he might want to give the guys another try, because so far, I mean, yes, he had a great match with Kiera Hogan, but I think all roads are going to lead to Dementia DeRose again, and I don't see that being a road he's going to get passed through.
Well, and part of the reason for, you know, a strategic move by bringing Marty Bell in, and thanks to you know, to Fireman, who's running a show out in Thompson, Georgia on Saturday, who's bringing Marty Bell in for his show, it helped us get Marty Bell, you know, that weekend as well, and I'm so excited to get to work with her. Had a chance to meet her a few times when I lived in Florida. She's an absolute class act. And then also, you know, everything works out, Kimberly will be there too on Sunday. Two world-class women wrestlers in one building, you know, and hopefully, you know, this is going to, you know, help step Roar up to where AWE's starting to step up to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's something I would love to see. I'd love to see more well-traveled world-class women's athletes in Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment.
Oh, I totally agree, and it's something that we've been working on since March when we started doing Roar. We wanted to actually do all women's shows, but it just didn't seem like we had much of a you know, fan response to it. So we kind of just made it part of the AWE division for right now. I still would love to have a Roar weekend where we do a Roar show. It would be, you know, something I've always wanted to do. I think women's wrestling is fantastic right now in the Indies, especially, and there's so much talent out there. It's ridiculous. They're just getting better and better, and now girls are starting to send us resumes and say, hey, we want to be a part of Roar. Like, this is a cool thing. Like, you know.
And that definitely with as good as the show is going to be on Sunday, I mean, and I'm sure this is going to be a good problem to have, but definitely something to, you know, to to know is that a week later you have two weeks later you have another show, and you know I think the expectations will be higher to put in an even better show on the 29th.
It's a different show. We definitely know that we're gonna have a 5-man elimination style main event, or 10-man, you know, 5 on each side. The Heroes versus the Hierarchy. They're gonna, you know, create their teams here in the next few days, and I'm excited about that. Don't really know what else we're gonna do on that day. I know Aaron Epic's gonna be back in town that week. I know Cade and Solo, I think, are coming back. So, you know, a lot of talent's coming back that week that isn't on this show. But and that's one of the reasons why, like, I like the bi-weekly, because we can stagger the talent, because there's so many guys that want to come to Atlanta right now.
It's yeah,
unbelievable how much talent is contacting us constantly about wanting to get in. And it's a good problem to have, but at the same time, it's like, well, shit, like, we love all these guys, and our fans are starting to like a lot of these guys, and these stories are starting to, like, intertwine and mingle, and it's like, wow, this is kind of crazy.
Yeah, I also think that with that is this, you know, so-called AWE Kool-Aid that people have been drinking is also, is the same Kool-Aid that the wrestlers are drinking, because of all the promotions in Georgia, they want to come and work in yours.
This is something that, like, internally I've been dealing with for about, like, 3 weeks now, maybe four. I've probably actually heard, like, this since it started. I use the word enthusiasm, and I feel like, okay, you know, and I'll put, you know, a name out there, JT Dunn. JT Dunn seems enthusiastic when he's booked for AWE. JT Dunn seems like he wants to be here. Iceberg is enthusiastic about AWE. Jimmy Ray is enthusiastic about AWE. Jimmy Ray's not been enthusiastic about wrestling in 20 years, like 16 years. I mean, he told me, like, to my face, he's like, dude, like, this is, like, one of the best companies I've ever worked for. Like, you guys take care of us. You guys, you know, work with us, and it's growing and you know, whatever. And then there's, like, this major, like, disconnect outside of that. Like, the vets, I think, get it. But some of the young guys are just like, hey, do this for me, boss. Hey, do that for me, boss. Hey, boss, can you do this for me? And it's like, you realize that we got, like, 40 wrestlers we have to do this stuff for, right? So, it's weird. That's why, like, you know, and I'll be honest, that's why you see a lot of outside guys, because they seem more enthusiastic about coming to us and driving 8, 10, 14 hours than some of the guys that drive 8 to 12 minutes. So, it's kind of a shame, actually. That is, like, the hardest part of being a promoter, and honestly, one of the things that kind of saddens me the most about this scene right now.
Yeah, I think, like, I've seen guys like, you know, JT and David Starr, you know, share more things on social media than some of the local younger talent that you do have. And it's like, you know, it shouldn't be the opposition. All the other guys be doing, I always felt like they need to be doing more. It's more of a partnership. You guys are working together to make this thing great for all the fans to come and want to pay for it. But I
don't want to, like, you know, pick up a shovel and bury anybody that's close to us, because, you know, it is a business and we're trying to build it up, but it's become one of those things for me, even where, like, you know, today, I made a huge mistake. I made a huge scheduling error. I'm kind of frustrated about it. But nobody else even took the time to say, hey, I'm going to this, or, hey, I can do this for you. And it was like, you know, it is, I don't know, man. It is what it is. But I think you see, who are the guys filming the promos? Who are the guys, you know, staying after the show to help, you know, clean up, and who are the guys that are getting there early to help out? I think you know who's kind of dedicated and who's just kind of like, it's another Georgia show. When the money mark runs out of money, it's over. We'll find a new one.
Well, I think some of it comes down to you talking about the veterans appreciating it more. And I think it comes down to, because they've been around long enough and they've seen so many other different promotions. They've seen a lot of promotions come and go. And a lot of them, you know, like you mentioned, Iceberg and Jimmy Rave being enthusiastic, they've been around Georgia wrestling for a long time. And so when you have something as special as AWE in Atlanta, they appreciate it that much more because they know how bad things have been in Georgia and how bad they've been in wrestling at a lot of promotions. A lot of these younger guys haven't been around long enough to see things come and go in all this. Everything's kind of new to them, and everything's kind of got a shine on it. So they just kind of jump to whatever. But the people who've been around and who've seen understand what special really is. You know, that's why you have guys like you said, Sugar D, you know, and David Starr and JT Dunn and you know, putting promos for these shows because they understand how special it is.
Well, and that's it goes in training. I mean, everything starts in training, and you know, the Blazing Light Dojo isn't a physical thing right now, but you know, the Blazing Light Dojo has trained Corey Chavis, Caleb Conley, Chip Day, Jimmy Rave, Iceberg. I mean, there's so many guys that Murder One has trained, and those guys seem to appreciate spots a little bit more than some of the kids that, you know, weren't maybe trained by Murder or weren't really brought up the right way. Like, I hate to say, I don't want to say it's a generational thing because I think we're all around the same age, but Vince said it on that podcast with Steve Austin, you know, millennials don't want to grab the brass ring. And sometimes I kind of agree with that. Like, I see, like, those 23 and 24-year-olds are not wanting to grab anything. They're wanting to be handed to them, and they're always saying, well, what am I doing next? What am I doing in 2 weeks? What am I doing in 4 weeks? It's like, well, what would you like to do? But you pitch me a scenario, and let's see what it sounds like. So, but that's my opinion, and maybe I'm wrong, and I'm an asshole anyway. So it is what it is. But my brand is AWE. That's my brand. That's my baby. That's the thing that I spend countless hours working on, and I hope and I pray to whatever deity I believe in that day that guys that are wrestling are trying to build their brand as feverishly as I'm trying to build my brand, because then we can work together. But until I see that, I don't really want to work with you.
Yeah, basically, it's, you know, I think it's, you know, if people are not willing to you know, do what it needs to be done to be successful, you know, you definitely don't want those people around.
Right.
They're just going to drag you down.
Yeah, we've had some of those in our locker room, and they're not here anymore. And they can say, oh, well, it's money or this. Well, yeah, it's a little bit of everything. I mean, if there's 35 people in the crowd, you can't expect to make $50 or $100. You can't. Because obviously, you're not over. 35 people pay to see you. Sorry. It's a tough pill to swallow that you're not popular. Now, sure, that same person may go 45 minutes on the street to Monroe or McDonough or wherever, and that show's got 150 people. Well, you know what? They've got 5 years on me or 4 years on me or 10 years on me. You know, look at Cornelia. You know, God bless those guys trying to start Why We Wrestle. But that's got 18 years of history. They've had more wrestling in Cornelia in 18 years than Atlanta's had in 15. Way more.
You know how I got into indie wrestling? It's because Chip Day found my group's meetup page and joined it and was like, hey, there's this show coming up that I'm going to be on. I'm from your area. You should come out and see me wrestle. And, you know, three of us did, and now there's like a dozen of us that come to AWE shows. And it's because Chip was putting in the legwork of going out and finding people to come to the shows to see him wrestle.
And that's all it takes, and that's like, you know, God forbid, today on my Facebook page, you know, past tense, because, you know, you guys are going to record or whatever, but I had a post how to invite people, and everybody's like, I had somebody message me, like, why did you post that? Well, because obviously I'm the only person inviting people. Are you embarrassed to be a wrestler? Are you embarrassed to say you work for AWE? Then let me know, and I won't use you anymore. Please. Don't waste my time, and don't invite all. If you're listening to this and you want to help us out, don't invite all. That's the stupidest thing to do. Just pick a few friends that you know that might like wrestling. Like, it's 20 people, just make it look like we're trying.
You do have a special going on. I believe it's two tickets for $25.
Yes, I am wanting you to bring a friend. If you were come to a show and you came by yourself, buy the 2-for-25 deal. If you already have bought your season pass, buy your friend a ticket. Buy two friends a ticket. If you want to, go to brownpapertickets.com. I think it's atlantawrestling.brownpapertickets.com and donate a dollar to us even. I hate begging for money. I'm not trying to beg for money, but we do have the option to donate money to us now. If you want to keep us, like, help us keep going, because it's not exactly the cheapest business I've ever tried to start, that's for sure.
Well, thank you, Josh, for joining us, and we definitely look forward to this Sunday at the Quad, 4 p.m., to see just a great show headlined by Jimmy Rave and David Starr and much, much more.
The debut of Marty Bell, internationally known Marty Bell, the best hair in pro wrestling.
I mean,
Danny, do you disagree that you're not the best hair in wrestling?
It's pretty darn good, yeah. Especially since Dementia changed hers last week. She Marty definitely takes it.
Who knows? Maybe this is the start of a long running feud that will culminate with a head shave.
Yeah. Wow.
Hey, you're going somewhere there now.
Yeah.
Well,
good. See, if it does happen. No, I would never do that to Marty Bell or Dementia. Like, their hair is part of their gimmick, so I couldn't do that.
Well, once again, good luck on Sunday, and we will be there.
Front row, man, screaming our hearts out.
Absolutely.
We are working on mimosas too, so tell your lady friends.
Hey.
And we are a more adult show because we are in a bar. It's not that we don't want your kids there, but we don't babysit kids. And apparently, I guess kids in a wrestling show caused a lot of chaos this past weekend. So keep your fucking kids away from AWE. Thank you.
It's not that we don't want your kids there. It's just don't bring your kids.
We want your 15 and up to be there because they actually enjoy the product. If they're under 15, they don't need to be listening to what we say. Let them go play Call of Duty and hear worse.
All right, so thanks to Josh Wheeler from Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment for joining us. And yes, everybody come out to the Quad on Sunday at 4 p.m. It's going to be a great show. And before we close, I do want to just briefly mention here, Evolve had two shows this past weekend, Evolve 51 and Evolve 52. They had back-to-back shows. Now, on November 6th, they had the first show where they had a kickoff show with ACW Wrestling, and they had a few matches, including the ACW title match, between Sideshow and Aaron Epic. So that was pretty cool. Seeing how they, you know, giving other promotions in the area a little time, on their pay-per-view, or I guess it was a pre-show, to get a little more exposure. But some things to mention here. So Peter Casa defeated Ethan Page. Matt Riddle defeated Drew Gulak. Now, you guys know who Matt Riddle is?
Oh, yeah. Riddle's a former UFC fighter.
Right, right. So seeing him wrestle, he, like, you know, Lesnar wrestles a semi, you know, MMA style. Now, Matt Riddle, I don't know if you guys ever seen him wrestle a wrestling match, but it's basically he is doing basically MMA moves. It's basically wrestling like if he was in an MMA match.
And, but that's the thing. He like, against Drew Gulak, Drew Gulak can hang with him doing that.
Yes, he can. But the thing is just, like, the whole match was just, like, takedown, submission move, takedown, submission move. There wasn't much, you know, of what we're accustomed to for pro wrestling. So I guess for me, that's just a little bit of a turn off, because, you know, I wanted to see other things where he was, you know, yes, it drew, it's a good opponent to have the type of matches. To me, just not my cup of tea, per se.
Well, that's where the 31 flavors of wrestling come in. Yeah. Some people, that I think that kind of style could help see people who are a little more into, say, UFC and mixed martial arts and maybe like wrestling a little bit. He might be the guy that can help bring them back, bring them into wrestling more. You know, like he and guys like Evolve Champion Timothy Thatcher, you know, guys who wrestle more that MMA style that's just like, you know, a lot more on the ground, just a lot more like brutal, you know, stiff shots, stiff submissions. I think that's one of the things that Evolve's trying to build themselves around, though.
Yeah.
Is make like that a part of what sets them apart from some of the other promotions.
Definitely. But I guess we'll see. We'll need to see more of him and see how he evolves in his repertoire. Then we had Leo Rush go against defeated Fred Yehi. Of course, both of them, impressed, the people at FIP. So I guess they decided, hey, come to an Evolve show. And so they were there. That was a pretty cool match, in my opinion. I enjoyed it very much. Tracy Williams defeated Martin Stone. Then TJ Perkins defeated Anthony Nese. Drew Galloway defeated Caleb Conley. This was a fantastic match. I mean, Drew Galloway is just, ever since he left WWE, has just had some great matches. And I'm glad that now he's back with Evolve because, he had the title there and then he lost it and it was gone for a bit. But now he's back and against Caleb Conley. Caleb Conley is just is having a really good singles run. And I think that I want to see more. And then for the main event, the Evolve title match between Timothy Thatcher against Johnny Gargano. And this one a long time, and Thatcher retained the title, which was the next night.
Before then, though, Galloway came out after that match, and Galloway congratulated Thatcher on his win. He said, we're having a match tomorrow night. He said, Galloway said he won the Evolve Championship his first night in because he came to challenge Chris Hero. Chris Hero turned a non-title match into a title match. Drew Galloway asked if Thatcher would do the same for him. There was a little bit of debate because they said, well, that's not how Evolve works. You don't just walk in and say, yeah, sure, I want a title shot. And they reluctantly agreed to it, though, because both of the wrestlers did. So that was the big thing that set up the match. Prior to that, the match the next night between Thatcher and Galloway was going to be non-title.
Yeah, it was supposed to be non-title, but yeah, it became a title match. So for the kickoff show, though, for Evolve 52 on the 7th, they had FIP have a few matches on there, and they were. For the most part, they were pretty good. They will get some of their, names in there to put up. I think it went a little longer than expected, which made the Evolve show start a little later. But for the main show, we had Ethan Page defeat Leo Rush. And now with Ethan Page, I really like this guy. I think, I hadn't really seen much of him before. Now seeing him, though, a little more and more, I really like his style. After the fact, though, Paige asked, Gargano to be his tag team partner because next January there will be a tournament for to crown the first ever Evolve Tag Team Champions. Of course, Johnny wanted no part of that. And Gargano asked Drew Galloway, and Drew Galloway agreed, so it'll be Gargano and Galloway. Next, Anthony Nese defeated Peter Casa. Matt Riddle defeated Tracy Williams. Caleb Conley defeated TJ Perkins. Drew Gulak defeated Johnny Gargano in this match. I really enjoyed and basically made Johnny just about pass out. That was definitely a pretty good match. And then for the Evolve title, Timothy Thatcher defeated Drew Galloway. After the match, Thatcher extended his hand out, and but Galloway wanted none of it, and he just walked out. And after that, TJ Perkins, Drew Gulak came out and they looked like they were going to attack Thatcher, and out came Matt Riddle, and what they did is had an impromptu tag team match, which in became a no contest because Matt Riddle turned on Thatcher, and they basically took him out. Now they are a group called Catch Point. And so I guess now it's going to be Thatcher going against these guys. Probably, I don't know, maybe Gulick first or Perkins and then eventually Riddle. But I think that now, you know, Thatcher has a few guys to work with for the next few Evolve shows.
Yeah, it looks like it's building probably to the big one of the trio would be Riddle, I think. I think Matt Riddle's probably the one that say he fights in the bigger match, just because the way they're building Riddle up. And the way, since Matt Riddle was the one who technically is like, I'll be your partner, and then he betrayed him. You know, so I think that's probably where the big match is of this feud. I think it comes down to Timothy Thatcher versus Matt Riddle.
Yeah, I think that's what it should lead to that. So that was the two shows. Definitely make sure you check him out, WWNLive.com. They are available on demand. Just two really good shows. Also, for the next show for WWN Live will be a Shine pay-per-view, and it will be Shine 31, December 11th, starting at 9 p.m. Matches have not yet been announced, but definitely keep a lookout for that. And so Evolve 53, 54, 55 will be back-to-back-to-back Royal Rumble weekend. And they're going to have a bunch of, you know, tag teams here for this three-night tag tournament. And announced so far is Johnny Gargano and Drew Galloway, the RPG Vice, and Anthony Nese and Caleb Conley.
I mean, those are three pretty big teams right there.
I mean, that definitely a great way to start a tournament with those names is, and just imagine how many more names they could bring out here. We might see, there's a number of different groups you can get in here. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing, the different themes. So it's definitely good to check out. I don't know. I'm considering going down to the Orlando area myself to check this out. Those will be January 22nd, January 23rd, January 24th. For those going to the Royal Rumble or watching it, the bell time for Saturday and Sunday will be 2 p.m. So it should be over in time for any NXT or, in the Royal Rumble. So definitely check those out. And with that, that is our show for today. And Mike Bryan, thanks for joining me. It's you, Danny Danger, and everybody make sure that you check out Cobb Wrestling Fans if you're in the Metro Atlanta area, and if you just, you love wrestling, you love watching wrestling with wrestling fans, definitely a great place to go. We meet regularly in the Kennesaw area at Mike's Place, and definitely for more information, Cobb Wrestling Fans on Facebook and meetup.com. And make sure you like us on Facebook as well, FOW Radio. And follow us on Twitter at FOW Radio. Danny's on Twitter at Danny F in Danger. I'm on Twitter at Yellow Maniac. And until next time, keep watching wrestling.